Well, it's hard to believe another week has gone by, but it has, and it is time once again for the Parish of the Patriots. Yes, Tuesday is here. The wait is over. Who would think Tuesday be a day to look forward to? But it is because of this show, if I do say so myself. I am glad you joined us once again this week. If you're new, first time listening for whatever reason, we do have a Christian specific segment later on the show. We shoot for the halfway point. I usually don't make it the halfway point. Sometimes it's a little early, sometimes a little late. Show's generally an hour long. Sometimes it's right at an hour. I've been doing a lot better with that lately. A lot of times I run a few minutes over, but we don't do 2 hour shows here because my brain won't last that long. This is 167th installment, and yeah, time flies when you're having fun. We'll go ahead and get this out of the way like we do every week at the beginning. The show is supported by you, the listeners. You know, what you see is what you get. It's not like one of those video games. You know, if you play video games, it's like, oh, this is a free to play game. Just download the game. It's free to play. And you're like, heck yeah, free to play video game. That's awesome. And you download the game, and then you find out really quick that you don't get any of the good stuff that makes the game fun unless you pay the money. Yeah, you can play the game with this low-tier garbage stuff, but to get anywhere, you're gonna have to spend. You got to buy gold. You got to buy gold. Yeah, get premium. Otherwise, you're not going to ever grind out your stats. So this show isn't like that. You don't have to spend gold to grind your stats on this show. What you see is what you get. Your stat grinding is the same regardless. But I do ask, if you get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay your tithes. It means more to you. It means more to me than I can say. You know, it all averages out. You know, some weeks get a lot of, you know, what I consider a lot of financial support. You know, other weeks it's kind of barren, but I know it all averages out, and it all, regardless, is very much appreciated. If you want to be a part of that, go down to the bottom of the description page here at Radio Albion. We got snail mail, got Bitcoin, got the Monero addresses back up and running. And yes, the old Monero address is still good. If you still have that somewhere, that's fine. We've got that back up and going. Email addresses down there for your notes or whatnot. So, as always, we're going to get off into the listener supporter mailbag this week. Mr. T, one of our weekly supporters, GPD, Putin 2024. We may get it whether we like it or not because the whole thing might collapse. The clown world might collapse. I saw where the Joe Brandon, they running around talking about, I don't remember how many or whatever billions. We need another this many billion more dollars to send to Ukraine. The previous story was, well, we're working on some student loan debt relief, but you're going to have to wait. And they're like, some members of Congress say student loan debt is too costly. We can't afford that. But the same Congress people run around ready to sign off on another umpteen billion dollars for the Ukraine. But it's just like when I see the story I talked about here a while back, you know, where they're like, oh, they're proposing a law to tax billionaires 20%. And I'm like, you know, young people might fall for that shit, but the rest of us have been around long enough. We've heard that so many times. Like, trust me, it never happens. You're going to get your student loan debt forgiven, maybe, with these conditions. And if you stand on your head and wink one eye. But if you're the Ukraine, if you're Israel, whoever, you're going to get all these billions of dollars. Dear GPD, may you find enclosed the best money I've ever spent, a modest gift for everything I learned from you. Let me know if you received the money, and that's from an agent in Philadelphia. And yes, I did. And yes, I read the enclosed essay, and I found it very interesting. Yes, I really did. I found it good stuff. There is a time, I do believe. One of the things, you see these patterns, you know, and you can see these patterns. And no, I'm not preaching early, but, you know, as a Christian believer, you see these patterns. You see patterns in the way that God has worked before, and he follows the same patterns now. Same thing with Satan on the flip side of that. And Satan works, kind of has the same playbook. You know, these things follow these patterns. One of the patterns I think is important as we are in these tumultuous times is there's always a remnant. If the whole rest of everything gets wiped out, there's always a remnant. You go back to the flood and you know, Noah and his crew got on the ark. They were a remnant left over. Everybody else got to swim with the fishes. They went to Davy Jones' locker. But Noah and his crew, they on the ship. There was a remnant. There's that pattern, a remnant left. You know, God destroyed the ancient nation of Israel, but there was a remnant left. Then come in and there'd be another cleansing, but there's a remnant left. We have to know that there's that pattern now. We see the church, as they say, is a broad general term now, and it's a complete, absolute mess. Nobody should want to have anything to do with it. And I hate to say that. You say, you're discouraging people from going to church. Well, if they're teaching heresy, yes, you're better off not getting any message than going and getting a false message telling you to chase after the things of this world. Anyway, support coming in from Jackie. No note this week, but I did get it, Jackie. And as always, it really is appreciated. Hope things are going well for you. Hope all is well there. So yeah, we got one more, and I'm saving it for the Christian specific segment, because good stuff, really good stuff, and it'll be the opportunity to launch off on one of my favorite topics for that. So again, hopefully y'all hang around for that. Yeah, it is crazy. Watch all this go on. You know, the inflation's getting crazy. You know, and they keep trying to tell. It is amazing to me how these people act like they can just create reality. They do. They could create reality by just putting stuff in the media. I saw a story the other day written by some woman in the U.S., and she was mocking these people in Russia on the news media and the TV there in Russia, because they were having all their news talk shows. And like these people on there, like they're up there talking about they're ready to ride or die. They're like, we just ought to go ahead. We just go ahead and have our war with the U.S. Let's just do this. We're ready. If we die, we die. You die someday. And she's sitting there being snarky. That's her response. Now, anybody with wisdom would sit there and say, you know, maybe I really don't want to have a war with a nation that's ready to ride or die to the end, when we live in a nation of soyjacks and mentally unstable people who are just going to, you know, at the first real inconvenience. I mean, real inconvenience, like there's no food in the grocery store kind of inconvenience, or going to completely fall apart. You're going to go up against a nation where they're publicly talking about, well, you're going to die someday. Let's go ahead and fight these assholes. And they have a history. You know, their culture is still holding together. Ours has, we have no culture. We have no common society. We have no common bond. We've abandoned everything that made us who we are. And we're going to take them on. And our response, the response from the woman who wrote this article, is essentially snark and calling them stupid. You know, they act like all this antagonistic behavior towards Russia and China and India and everybody else that isn't a part of the, you know, international community, i.e. the U.S. sphere of influence. You know, they act like all of these other people are like them, like all of these other people are just bluffing. They're just talking trash. Then they, you know, I don't think they are. They act like dealing with these other countries is the same way as banning somebody from Twitter, the same way as writing a really nasty article and getting someone fired from their job. You know, they act like that. They act like dealing with Vladimir Putin is like dealing with me. You know, well, we'll just dox him and get him fired from his job. No, he's got nukes and an army. And of people that are publicly talking about ready to ride or die. Let's do this thing. Let's fight it to the end. We're going to die someday. Better to be on our feet fighting for what we believe in. We ain't going to put up with this crap. They act like it's just the same thing. That's how delusional they are. It's insane. It's insane. But I know you keep running around trying to blame the inflation, though, on Putin. It's Putin's price hike. Who believes that crap? I guess somebody does. Somebody go down there and they can't afford groceries and they're like, damn you, Vladimir Putin. It's all so garbled. It is. It's a mess. Ukraine's going to win the war, but then again, Russia might nuke us all if we don't die of the coronavirus first. It's all just jumbled. It's all just jumbled together. I saw a story the other day. I read this news stuff. I can't stand, by the way, I can't hardly stand watching videos, you know, or watching news story. I catch like 90 seconds, you know, the 2-minute wrap up at the network news, just so I know what the lie is for today. But I don't sit around and subject myself to it. I believe as a Christian believer, it's spiritually unhealthy to subject yourself to people that are intentionally lying to you on a grand scale. And they're providing this edit, you know, this, oh, we have video footage, you know, they try to trick your mind. I think it's an attack on you spiritually, mentally. But I do want to know what they're lying about. But I do read the news. I do. My news comes from reading. I read news. I read all sorts of news sources, you know. But I think it's easier to kind of hash out when you read it. One thing that drives me nuts, by the way, is when I click on a news story to read the story. You know, and they keep trying to play a video of the story. You know, I just want to read the story. I'm capable of reading. I'm perfectly fine. Perfectly capable of reading. I may not be capable of a lot of things. I may not be the brightest person in the world. I don't claim to be. But I'm perfectly capable of reading the news story. I don't need the damn video to keep, and then you keep pausing it and you scroll past it, but then it pops up. It pops up at the bottom of the screen. They keep trying to play the damn video. Shut up. I just want to read your damn story. Yes. Or when you click on some news story, somebody links up, you click on some news story like the New York Times, you know, New York Times, and you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to read this garbage. And you click on it and you start to read it and then it pops up. You can't read this unless you whitelist us from your ad blocker or pay money and subscribe. Like, I'm going to give you assholes any money. I don't need to read your dribble. they not only want to lie to you. They not only want to lie to you and propagandize you. They want you to pay for it. They want you to give them money for lying to you, mentally, spiritually attacking you. Speaking of mentally and spiritually attacking you, I saw a story the other day that really did. I try to be as professional as I can. You know, I try to keep my show as family friendly as I can. But sometimes, you know, I'm sorry. I'm the one host on Radio Albion that does litter my show sometimes with a spice it up with a bit of profanity. And if that offends you, I don't really apologize. But it just is. It's just how. You know, just how. Because sometimes you just can't. You just have to have that energy. You just got to put a little salt on it. That was salty. Salty that day. I saw a news story that day. Really pissed me off. Salty. Put some salt on there. You remember the meme girl from several years ago. Remember? Went on Dr. Phil to cash me outside. You know? The white girl is trying to act all black or whatever. The cash me outside girl. She was a meme, you know, a thing. You know, for, I don't know, 6 weeks or something. Was stupid. It's just one of those things you didn't pay really any attention to, but it was there. It was in the pop culture discourse. The meme girl, cash me outside, acted all trashy and slutty. She just an overall... Just an overall piece of shit. Anyway, I read this story the other day and is like, you know, where is she now? And they made it a point to tell us in the story that she's worth, I don't know, $80 million or something. For what? Well, her rap career. I don't know. I guess she has a rap career. And then as soon as she had turned 18, because she went on that show when she was like, I don't know, 15 or something. But it said as soon as she turned 18, she got her an OnlyFans account. She made $50 million on OnlyFans. $50 million. $50 million. She ain't even good looking. But you're telling me. I'm picking my words. I'm sorry. I'm not stumbling over my words. I can just blurt it out there. You're telling me these thirsty guys out there are willing to pay all this money, where she making $50 million for showing her not that great looking self on OnlyFans. I think they put this stuff out though. I mean, why are you hearing about it? Why are you hearing about it? It's they put this stuff out to really gaslight you. You know, I do, because this society, this culture has this message and you have internalized it. I guarantee you, you might think you haven't. Even if you're aware of it to a certain extent, you've internalized it. Because I'm very aware of it, and I still catch myself internalizing it. Because we were raised in it. This was the message. You get programmed when you're a kid. That's why it's important to be careful what you expose your kids to and how you know, the lessons you teach them, and try to be as aware as you can. Because kids are born like a blank slate. They're like a blank computer. But you got to add the programming. You're the coder. You are coding for your kids. You're coding for your kids. You get, because those things are still embedded. And later on, even when you realize some of that's bullshit, it's still embedded and you'll catch yourself falling back on it. You know, And that is his message in our society, that your value and your worth as a human being is directly related to how much money you make. What do you do? What are you worth? You're out there, I don't know, fixing tires at a truck stop. You know, sure, your work ensures that, you know, people will have food on the shelves at the grocery store so the big trucks can run, but ain't nobody thanking you. Meanwhile, this old skank getting $50 million for showing her stuff on OnlyFans. The society message is she is worth more than you. In fact, you're stupid because you're out there with your busted knuckles covered in dirt and sweat and mosquitoes. And she in the air conditioning showing her chi-chis there to everybody. I try to keep it family friendly. Her chi-chis to everybody. She's showing herself to everybody. And she got $50 million. Society says she's worth way more than you and your tire fixing self. It's a message of our society. It's so sick. It's a message of our society. And they put this out because they know it is. It's an attack on your mind. Because you read this and you get mad. I did. I done told you at the beginning. It pissed me off. I read this story. She worth $80 million. I'm here and here living like a poor person because I am a poor person. But this skank got $80 million. Because reasons. The society says your value as a human being is directly related to how much money you got. What do you make? What are you worth? It doesn't matter how you make it either. You know? If you got $20 million in the bank, but you got that money by ripping people off, that's good. I mean, look at the rap culture. You know, literally every single rap song is about I made all my money dealing drugs, pimping hoes, and I kill people. And that's celebrated because it doesn't matter. You got the money. You make fun of the blacks all you want to, but that's a reflection of our society as a whole. Wall Street, when you get down to it, Mitt Romney, vulture capitalist Mitt Romney ain't no different than your gangster rapper. He's going to get the money and that's all that matters. And that's what our society says. That's all that matters. They're more important than you. Your contribution, who you are, is more important because they got the money. Your poor ass breaking down tires at a truck stop. You ain't important. You didn't get the money. They put these messages out there. What do we need to know? The Cash Me Outside girl is worth $80 million or whatever the hell it is. That she made $50 million on OnlyFans. Why do we need to know that? Because they want you to think that... It's a way of indirectly, it's a backhanded way of indirectly insulting you and belittling you as a human being. When you see these stories, this is why they tell you these stories. To belittle you as a human being. Now, I'm not, like I said, I'm not preaching early. But this is part of the spiritual assault on you. This is to break you down. You see these stories about these rich, famous celebrity people or whatever, and they got all this money and they got all these diamonds and they have these umpteen million dollar estates that they live on and their lives are an utter wreck. If you knew people like that in your real life, like you worked with somebody and their life was a mess on the same level as your average Hollywood celebrity, you wouldn't want to have anything to do with them. You'd be like, man, that guy don't have his act together. And yet they got all this money. So as a society, they say they're a better person than you. You see these people that are a complete train wreck, but they're worth more than you. Why? Because they got the money. They got to be smarter than you because they got the money, right? It's all an attack. It's an attack on you mentally, spiritually. I do. I believe that. It's an attack on you mentally, spiritually. You got to push that stuff out, I guess is the point. When you see those stories, you catch yourself. You get to be like, man, ain't none of that matters. Like I said, I ain't trying to start preaching early. We got a Christian-specific segment. But it is. It's an attack on your mind. It's an attack on your spirit when you got to read something. She worth $80 million. What are you doing with your life? It's a sick society. And once again, it's a society that at the time right now is really at war with Russia. I mean, it's warming up. We see it escalating. They're talking about, is it going to escalate? Well, it's already escalated. It's just a matter of, are you going to stop? And there's no sign of them stopping. And they've got people in their public sphere talking about, we're ready to ride or die. You know, we're ready to do this thing. We don't even care. Yeah, we might die. We don't even care. As long as we get y'all. And you're going to go up with them, go up against them with this society. with this people. I like that correlation. I'm going to try to remember that, you know? Mitt Romney is no different than a gangster rapper. They pimping hoes, he's pimping your livelihood. He's pimping your company. He's pimping your 401k. He just pimped your stuff out. Now you're broke. But he's got the money. You got to listen to him. He's got to be smarter. How to be smarter, how to be better than you. It really is. We really live in a upside down, I don't know, screwed up, distorted society. We really do. But you always, people say, well, what difference? Y'all talk about this. Y'all talk about it. You're changing nothing. Well, you got to keep it in mind because you got to be aware of it. You know, if you're not aware of it, you're going to get sick inside. It's going to twist you all up. You got to understand these things that are going around so you can keep yourself together. You know, keep your act together. Don't go off the deep end. If people go off the deep end, you hear about them. They do crazy stuff. Why? You know, because they don't realize, they haven't really figured it out. They haven't listened to anybody actually articulate what's going on. So they don't understand. They just know that it makes them mad. It makes them upset. They don't even know why they're mad and upset. And the world around them. Got to keep all that. Got to keep it all together. It is a mess. You know, we look at this society. And I'm salty at our ancestors. I get mad. You know, it's easy to look at the society around you and get mad about it. You know, and look at the people around you. Be disgusted and mad. You know, what's wrong with people? Why don't they get it? Why don't they wake up? You know, I remember thinking people were going to wake up. Forget it. They ain't going to wake up. They're in a coma. They're in a coma. I don't think they're going to wake up. I mean, you know, I inform people. You know, we sit here and discuss these things. I don't know, maybe a few, but, you know, they come on, listen the first time, and say, wow, I didn't realize that. And they start at least becoming, becoming cognizant of the world around them. That's what I'm about. But talking about like society as a whole. The people are going to wake up. I don't think they are. They're in a coma. But, you know, I ain't salty about that. I'm really not. I'm not mad at the people around us. I am salty at our ancestors, though. You know? Because you sit here and say, well, you know, white people still hold the majority in our nation. How come they're not doing anything? Well, because all of these, you've got all these power structures here. There's this leverage of power now in place. You know, these people in power have this ability. They've got these levers that give them all this leverage, I guess is what I want to say, of power. There's this power differential. Yeah, you got numbers, but there's this power differential as far as amount of power people can wield. But that came about because of our ancestors. You know, I mean, that really, just you go on back and look. You go back and look at the way we were sold down the river by our own people. That's what makes me mad. Our own people sold us down the river. You just go through like in the U.S. from the beginning to now, they sold us down the river. Continually sold us down the river. Let's give women the right to vote. It'll be great. Who voted for that? I didn't. Our ancestors did, though. I was pushed through by those. And you sit there and say, well, it was pushed by the Jews. Well, it might have been, but back then the Jews didn't have the levers of power that they have now. Our ancestors just decided to do it. Probably got bribed. You know, let's hand our complete control of our monetary system over to the private banks. What could go wrong? Our ancestors did that. You can't, I mean, the people that took them up on it, that bribed them, yeah, they took it. But our ancestors are the ones that gave it away. I think of some guy being alive back then, you know, like Woodrow Wilson. I'm going to hand all this over. I mean, what'd he get? He's dead now. He didn't get nothing at the end of the day. But he must have got, these people got some kind of payoff that they said, yeah, I'll go on. How much will you give me? Whoa, yeah. Sure, I'll hand you control of the money supply. What could go wrong? I don't care. I'll be gone. Let our ancestors, let those who come after us, let those who come after us worry about it. They're the ones that sold us out. We're sold out. You know, the people around today, as bad as people can be. But they didn't make those decisions. They weren't alive. I wasn't alive. You wasn't alive back then. Made these progressive decisions over the course of the last 200-300 years that were made that brought us where we are today. And now you look around, why aren't people doing anything? We got all these, you've got this leverage of power, this power differential. The average person is pretty, you know, I'm sorry, pretty helpless, you know. The January 6th people tried to do something, and we see how that turned out. You see, this illustration. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be a black pillar. Say, I'm not even resentful so much around people around us today. And, you know, yeah, you talk about people are sheep and they'll go along with anything. And that's true. And people should resist where they can, you know. Not doing the vaccine, for instance. I don't care what they say. I'm not doing the vaccine. Not doing it. Not submitting to your lie. I refuse to submit to the lie. As a Christian believer, I refuse to submit to the lie. You know, but as far as, oh, I'm somehow going to rise up and have the power to change this, it's not going to happen. I'm realistic about that. It could have been prevented generations ago, but for whatever reason, our ancestors were short-sighted. You know, wears me out. People talk about it. People like look back at those who like even go back to the founding fathers and they like turn them into these deities. You know, the founding fathers were so wise. Well, I'm sorry, but I look at the overall outcome of what they set up. And obviously there were some flaws in the plan. You know, I mean, granted, I'll be the first to say no political system is going to last forever. That's not realistic, but still 200 years ain't that great. You look at you, there's obviously some, there were some flaws in the plan. I'm sorry, it wasn't perfect. They should have come up with something a little better. Should have put some better safeguards in there. They shouldn't have written that so vaguely. When you consider that just a few short years after writing all of that and establishing all of that, where the states signed up because they thought it was voluntary. Just a few short years later, the states found out that it isn't voluntary at all. The union is a Hotel California. You can check out anytime you want, but you're never going to leave. The South tried to leave and they got burned down. Burned down to the ground. And that was just a short few years later. So yeah, there was obviously some problems with what the founders established. Yet people deify. They're like, deities, the founding fathers were so wise. Well, obviously not. If just a few short years later, we had the Civil War. Because everybody thought, well, we can secede if we don't like this deal anytime we want to. They wrote this thing where all the rights really go to the state. The federal government is just kind of there in case of foreign, you know, to organize things in case a foreign enemy attacks us. A few short years later, you got Civil War because, yeah, we lied. We lied about all that. You know, there wasn't anything actually safeguarding to make sure that could happen. Oh, anyway. Yeah, it's a mess. But, you know, here we are. Here we are all these years later. I guess the point is, don't get so, you know, we take reality where it is. But you got to remember, this is year. What we're living through right now didn't just happen. You got people just now coming in and they're just like, oh my gosh. You know, it's like the people that are like, the world, this country's a wreck. It's because Biden's in there. It's like, wow, where have you been for the last, I don't know, my entire lifetime? This country's a mess because Biden's in there. Like, that is the turning point. Like, that is just where it started. It just happened today when Biden got in there. Generations in the making. This mess is just, this is the culmination. You know, first time somebody smoked crack, the next day they probably look normal. When you see them all laid out on the street and they weigh like 85 pounds and they're all dirty and the teeth are all messed up and shit, that's the culmination of all that crack they did. It's just because that's the crack rock he just smoked did that to him. No, it's the accumulation of all the crack rocks they've smoked. This country has been on a crack rock binge for 200 plus years. And now we got a mess. It ain't just because Biden's in there, the Biden crack rock. Forget black rock, we got crack rock. Biden's in there. He's a crack rock. That's why everything's a mess right now. No, it's because this country's been binging on crack for 200 plus years, and now you see the result of it. It ain't just because of that last rock he smoked was what put him over the edge. No, is what did this. He was fine yesterday. Now he smoked that one crack rock. Look at him. Homeless on the street. Rotten ass teeth. No. No. It's because of all them crack rocks this country's been smoking for years. It's not just because of what now. It's not just because the people that are around now. You know, this has been years in the making. It's going to be years in the fixing. When it all collapses, when it all falls apart, we got to get down here and get in the Christian specific segment. When it all finishes, when it all collapses, understand, when it does come to an end, and it will come to an end, it's going to be years of rebuilding. It's going to be years of starting from scratch, not fixing it. This thing is going to come apart. It's going to implode. And then you just start rebuilding, starting from scratch. There's a big difference. Fixing means you can keep the thing you have. You just got to tinker with it a little bit and everything will be fine. The thing we got to have is burst into flames and is currently burning to the ground. Okay. You're not going to tinker with that. You're not going to fix it. When it finishes burning to the ground, you're going to have to accept that reality as a people. You're going to have to accept that reality and start building again from scratch. Just how it is. It's how it works. Anyway, we do got to get into, hopefully you got something out of that. Anyway, we got to get into the Christian specific message, a sermon this week. Know you're looking forward to it. If you're new, you should be looking forward to it. You listen one time, you'll be looking forward to it. Hopefully. Anyway, let's go ahead and get off into the Christian specific segment this week. As I say every week, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. For this week's message, we're going to go into the listener supporter mailbag, and it's going to be a great topic this week. I think we're going to have a really fun discussion. Let's go ahead and get into our listener supporter mailbag note here. Grandpa Dan writing to send you my tithe and give an update on family situation, which I'm keeping intentionally vague for obvious reasons. But this listener had written in before. They have family that's stranded in the Ukraine, and it looks like most all of them have gotten out, have been able to get out of there. And that is great. And that is great. And we had all of the, with the backdrop of the ridiculousness of the narrative that they were giving us several years ago about, you know, fleeing the brutal civil war in Syria. And these people weren't even from Syria. You know, this is a real case of refugees trying to get out of a war zone. And I've always said through this whole situation that my opinion is, you know, I'm always anti-war because it's always the regular people that suffer. So it is great news. I'm glad to hear that your family members, for the most part, have gotten out of there. But to continue with the note, to me, it looks like the USA is using this to try to cut Germany and the EU off at the knees and weaken Russia. Maybe it works, maybe it won't. But as I write this, seeing EU officials admit they plan on kicking that off after the French election, really hoping the West doesn't blunder itself into a nuclear war. And then there's another part here, which I'm leaving out, but yes, prayers are given, and I'll continue to try to my best to continue sending those your way. And I do hope and pray that all works out on that front. Again, that's very personal information, so we're not sharing it here on the show. I always try to respect y'all's privacy to the utmost of my ability. Now, to finish up here, and this will get us into our Christian specific, our sermon this week, on a more theological bit, could I get you to talk how we could have free will? I know you talked about us having it as a kind of proving ground for us, but honestly, I just don't get it. When I read about predestination and the fact that God is all powerful and all knowing and knew the result of creation before the creation happened, and with his infinite power to change every tiny variable, it seems that the universe would be exactly what he wanted and going exactly according to his plan. If that is the case, then we really don't have any choices, as the grand tapestry of time and history is already woven. We're just running along our little threads in a linear way. I agree that we have to take responsibility for our actions and do the best we can in this world. But to me, it looks like everything is running according to how it was built. Now, I get how to us it seems like we have choices, but if I try to look at it from a higher level, it looks like we don't. Dear brother in Christ, from Anon, and very much appreciate the topic, because I do. I've talked about this, as you mentioned, and I talked about this from several angles. And what happens is, you know, I don't know if y'all really, I get these things going in my mind and in these thoughts and these ideas. And I do my best to express them here, but sometimes, and I'm saying this, you know, just acknowledging I realize the case, I have the idea in my head, but it's always, sometimes it's really difficult to get them into words and really express them. So, you know, I really appreciate the fact that that you bring this topic to us, you know, with, you know, hey, I really don't get it, because it gives me up to where if I just did this, in other words, if I just came back to this topic again, I'd be sitting there the whole time in the back of my mind going, nobody wants to hear this. They've already heard it, and you're just, you don't have anything else to talk about. So you're whipping this out to go over it one more time because you really like the idea. So yeah, I really appreciate you bringing this to us. And that is going to bring us our Christian specific discussion this week. And like I say, it's going to be a fun discussion because it really lumps in a lot of things. It really lumps a lot of things together that I've kind of got worked out in my mind the way I see them. I mean, really, you have to start with the fact, you know, the temporal versus the eternal, and really understanding that difference. And I've tried to really sort this out in my mind. I mean, the temporal, the time, the temporary realm that we live in versus the eternal, which, of course, the eternal being the absence of time. And, you know, anybody who can say they really, truly understand all the nuance of that would be lying, because it is beyond our comprehension. But when you just understand the basics of eternity, means that time doesn't exist. So if you are in the eternal realm, you can observe any moment in time. This is my belief. I think of it as we live in this world, we live in this temporal realm, and you live in a glass box. That is one of the ways I've illustrated this in my own mind to myself. We live in a glass box. Somebody in the eternal realm could come observe you at any time. It's kind of a frightening thought. If you're in the middle of a moment of weakness and you're committing a great sin, if somebody in the eternal realm, one of your ancestors or one of your relatives, or here's something else, even you yourself, after you have gone and passed the eternal realm, could walk up and observe you doing those things. Thankfully, I don't believe those in the eternal realm really care. So they really probably aren't hanging around to catch you doing all of the things you're doing wrong. But I do believe it works more or less that way. We're like basically in a glass box. We're in a containment, and all of everything outside of that glass box is the eternal realm where time doesn't exist. Now, I've said this before, understanding the universe that we live in. Now, if you ask anybody how big is the universe, and everybody would say it's huge. It's huge. Well, why? Well, because if you wanted to go from here to this distant star that you see in the night sky, it's a long way off. Well, how do we know it's a long way off? Well, because it's, you know, 4 million light years away. In other words, at the speed of light, it would take you 4 million years to reach that star. You see, that distance, why we think this universe is big, is measured in time. It would take 4 million years at the speed of light. That's why in our mind, we perceive that as the universe is big, because it's that far away. However, if you eliminated the time aspect of that, the time part of the equation, and you could just, you know, blink your eye and you're there, then it's not large at all. That's why we perceive the universe that we live in, the temporal realm that we live in, as really big. It's because we're bound by time. If you eliminate the 400 million light years, then the star in the sky isn't distant at all. You could be there in an instant. Now, bear with me on that. I just wanted to lay that down. Realize that what you're really specifically getting into is the idea of free will and such. But I think it's important to kind of lay that backdrop of remembering the difference between this temporal realm and why it's small, why we're basically in a little containment. We're in like a glass box. If you're doing an experiment, if you watch a video of they're doing experiments with mice, you know, they're in a glass container, like a big aquarium, so they can be observed. We're kind of like that. Kind of like that. Now, getting to free will, yes, it's understanding that because God is in the eternal realm, yes, he knows how it's going to wind up. Obviously, we don't. Now, because God can know everything, you mentioned that, you know, God is all-knowing and he could intervene and, to use your words, he has infinite power to change every tiny variable that the universe would be exactly like he wanted. He could change every little variable. He could micromanage, but he doesn't. And I believe this is reflected in the fact that we have the natural order. And I've always said the natural order is like an automated system. You know, we talk about the natural order. Everybody knows what understands, I believe, this list of show what we mean when we're talking about the natural order of things. There is a rule. There is a law at work in nature. The natural order is essentially the automated program to keep things more or less in balance and running on its own in this world. Well, God wouldn't have had to create the natural order if he was interested in micromanaging every millisecond of our individual lives on this earth. Just because, yes, God can know everything you're doing and every part of your life, and God could micromanage that, doesn't mean he wants to. Just because God can know what is going on in everybody's life doesn't mean he really wants to, you know, sit around and stare at your individual life. It's a big picture thing. If you are a computer programmer and you design, you enter the code to build a computer program. You enter the code to do the job for you. You don't want to do that. You know you have to enter the commands so that you know at the end of the day what the program is going to do. But you put the commands and you set the structure up for the program to work. Now, if that was, say, in a video game, you're designing the parameters. Now, you may not know the exact way every individual player is going to play that game, nor would you really care. You wouldn't sit around once you release the video game. If it is an online game, you're going to sit around and monitor each individual player and what he's doing and how he's fighting the zombies or whatever your video game is based around. You know what the parameters are. It's up to the players to play out their role. You put certain things in place, and obviously, yes, the parameters have been set up, but it's up to the individual players on how they're going to play the game. Another way to look at this is if you have, let's say you have a ranch, and you've got, I don't know, I'm just grabbing a random number. You've got 500 head of cattle, and you go out there to check on your cattle. Because you got to keep up with your cows, you know, make sure you know, predators aren't getting in there and killing your calves, and make sure you don't have a cow that's down, you know, trying to give birth and having trouble and things like that. You got to manage your cows. When you go out and check on your cows, you don't go out there and put your hands on every single individual head of the 500 and check and make sure there's no blemishes on them or anything like that. No, you go out there and look at them. You say, well, there they are. You know, there they are. I don't see any down. Yeah, it looks like they're all here. They all came up when we honked the horn and put the cubes out. The cows all came up. Yep, there they are. Okay, the cows. But you don't go around and put your hands on every individual one. I think this also relates to why we pray. You know, yes, God knows everything and can know everything. But it doesn't mean he's sitting around staring at you while you're doing every single thing in your life. That's why we tend to always fall back on prayer in times of trouble. We're saying, hey, God, look over here. I've got this problem. Please help me out. Help me out over here. Look over here. You know, got a cow in trouble over here. Please take a look over here in the brush. This cow's down. Got problems over here. Again, just because God can know, and yes, he could micromanage every part of your life, doesn't mean he wants to. You have free will. Again, if the universe was supposed to run, if the universe as we understand it was supposed to run just with God micromanaging everything, then yeah, evil wouldn't exist. But we would be, going back to that video game analogy, we would be NPCs. We wouldn't have any actual reason to exist. Sticking with that analogy, when the game programmer creates the game, he puts NPCs in there for what reason? Well, they're supposed to interact with the players. You're not marketing the game for the NPCs. They're just there to carry out a role for the players. The game is created for the players. The NPCs, as far as beyond their little role, is irrelevant. Now, let's think about this. Like, okay, so you know, God has his overall big picture, and he knows where things are going to wind up. Let's say for you personally, let's say we're going to put this on a individual person. Let's say God, for whatever reason, has part of his plan is you were supposed to live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I don't know, 5 years from now. You're supposed to be there because he's going to have an interaction for you to take part in that actually is a little cog in the larger plan of things. And part of that cog is you are going to be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 5 years from now. But you don't live anywhere. You live in, I don't know, Prescott, Arizona or whatever. Now, he could come to you individually and say, hey, you know, you get a vision. you know, a blinding light, and it says, move to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania is part of my will. And you would say, yes, God, I will go to Pittsburgh or whatever. And you would go straight from point A to point B, and you'd be in Pittsburgh waiting around for God to do whatever it is he wanted you to do. But we all know that isn't really the way it works. Instead, maybe you go through, I don't know, two divorces, and you get into problems with alcohol, maybe get a DWI, you get thrown in jail, you lose your house because of these decisions you make. Then you lose your house and you're basically about to be homeless. And then all of a sudden you hear from a friend and he says, hey, I mean, I've got a spare room. You have to move up here to Pittsburgh. And you're like, man, I don't know. It's cold up there. I don't like cold weather. But after thinking about it, it's better than being homeless. And so you make your way to Pittsburgh and you wind up living in the spare room. You wind up getting off alcohol and you wind up getting your life more or less straightened out. And then along the road, you may not even realize it, but you do have an interaction as part of God's old plan. You may not even realize the interaction took place. You just had an interaction with somebody and that fit into the cog. Now, what's the difference between the two? If you just heard a voice and go to Pittsburgh, okay, went to Pittsburgh and point A, point B, it's all over. What did you learn? You see, you went through all the hard times. You made your decisions, the bad ones, unfortunately. But you grew from that. You had to recover from that. You learned the consequences of sin. I mean, when you were drinking, you continue. I say you. Obviously, I'm not talking about any of you in particular. But when you were getting drunk for the 874th time and getting in your car the night you were got pulled over for a DWI, you didn't do that thinking, man, I'm ruining it. I sure am enjoying screwing up my life. No, you're thinking, I'm having a great time. The sinning is a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun. It's sin, but I'm having a lot of fun. But see, it's always a lie. The sin was destructive. You wound up, you were destroying your life and didn't realize it. But you learn that by going through the experience. And you spiritually, hopefully continued, you know, in our scenario here, you would continue to pray and seek God even through this trouble. Or perhaps this is what causes you to come to God and to repent and to really earnestly start seeking him in your life. But at the end of the day, you wind up in Pittsburgh, just like you were supposed to. But you've now accomplished all of the spiritual growth. Yeah, you wind up having your interaction, which was your little cog in the machine of God's plan. But in the bigger picture of things, you grew spiritually. You are now a much more spiritually mature person than you were 5 years ago. You were free to make every decision. You could have woke up one day and said, I've decided to go to Pittsburgh on my own. Without going through all of that, that would have been your decision as well. You were going to wind up in Pittsburgh 5 years from now, one way or the other. But you made your decisions and you grew. God didn't make you take up the bottle. God didn't make you get a DWI. You made those decisions on your own. But because God sees the picture, he knows, well, you're going to be in Pittsburgh in 5 years. You're making the decisions that you want to make. I suppose perhaps a better way to think of it is it just because God knows what the outcome is going to be because he's standing back here in the outside space looking into the glass box of time that we live in? Just because he knows the outcome of where you're going to wind up being doesn't mean that he's manipulating, directing you and basically controlling you and your choices to get you to that outcome. If that makes sense. Just because he knows the outcome doesn't mean he's directly moving you around like a piece on a board. You've got your free will to do that. He can just see because he's outside of time. He can see how it's going to wind out. He can see where you're going to be. But he's not forcing you one way or the other. He doesn't want us to sin, so he's not forcing you to become addicted to alcohol and get a DWI. He's not forcing you to do that. But he does see the outcome of it. He does see where you're going to wind up 5 years from now because the 5 years doesn't actually exist because he's outside of time. I really do. I love this topic because you just one thing leads you to another. I mean, these are the type of things I wind up in my own time. I just sit here and turn over and over in my head. And I try to, when we get into them here on the show, I try to articulate them. And it's really hard for me. It is because I've got all of these things and, I'm thinking about them and this means this. It's hard sometimes for me to get them all gathered up and lined up nice and neat and discuss them. I know what's in my mind, It's hard to get it out there. But I think it's when you really start going down this path and really trying to understand, at least, you know, in the way we can, I think it's an amazing thing. This world, you know, we're told in the Bible, you know, we come into this world with nothing and we leave this world with nothing. You know, whether you're a king or whether you're a homeless beggar on the street, everybody goes into the box. Everybody leaves with the same amount that they came in with. You know, somebody may be really, really rich, but when they leave this world, they leave all their wealth behind to somebody else. What this tells us is that at the end of the day, all that matters while we're in this box is our own spiritual growth, our maturity, because we do take something with us. It's just not of a physical, it's not of a physical characteristic. It is a spiritual one. We leave this world with what we have gained spiritually, because we leave in the spirit, obviously. So you take the amount of spiritual maturity you have gained when you were born into the eternal realm. You don't want to be born into the eternal realm just, you know, with like an infant level of understanding. We want to have some understanding. We want to have a certain amount of maturity so that you can then, you're better prepared to carry on everything. Everything, not to be like fatalistic about it, but everything in this world, at the end of the day, everything in your life, none of it matters. Now, some people hear that and be like, you know, well, that's depressing, but it's not. It's not, because no matter how hard things are, no matter how hard things are, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. I'm getting age on me. Getting age, and obviously with things that have happened here in the last, say, 6-8 months, you know. When you start hearing words that are related to real possibility of death, it makes you make perhaps more reflective of these things. But at some point, if you think back in your own personal life, there was probably something around this time in your life, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. There were a huge deal to you, whether it was at your job and your personal life, whatever. And it was a huge deal. And you may have even laid awake at night and you were so worried. And it seemed like the end of the day, or I'm sorry, the end of the world to you at the time. But guess what? You can't even remember what that was now, huh? What's sad is when people get so twisted up, they can't see that. This is why I think it's important to understand, because sometimes it can become so entangling that you can't see outside of it. And people wind up, you know, doing things like killing themselves or, you know, killing somebody else out of a, you know, fit of rage or jealousy or whatever, and ruin their own lives. But at the end of the day, it was just a temporary thing. None of it actually matters. The older you get, all of you listening, you're all of different varying ages. But if you're young, I'm going to tell you, the older you get, you know, more and more people like you went to school with are dead. But if you live long enough to be 90 year old, your class reunion is you. You can have a class reunion anytime you want to, because it's just you. Everybody else is dead. More and more people. And I think back over my life and, you know, I know I had classmates that died as children in school in car accidents, and their life was just cut short. I had classmates that died shortly after graduation. I had classmates that died several years down the road, and their lives ended. And, you know, here I am. I'm still trucking along. What was important to those people while they were here on this earth? I don't know. Nobody knows, because now they're gone. All those worries, those concerns, those desires, emotions they felt, things they had hoped for, hopes, dreams, worries, depression, whatever, they're all gone, because they only mattered to them right then. It was mostly all in their mind. It was all a temporary thing. It was a temporary thing. No trouble nor pleasure in this world lasts forever. It's all temporary. It all just comes and goes. And then it's gone. Eventually, we leave this realm and we leave it all behind. And nobody's going to care. I tell you what, so one of the things I found is really, on occasion, if you ever, because one of the things I find curious is like if you're driving in the middle of nowhere, and you'll come up over a hill, you're going some down some little two-lane farm to market road, zero traffic, ain't seen but for a mile, and you top a hill and you look up, and there's a little cemetery up there, Hilltop Cemetery. And if you're not in a hurry, you might stop. I've done this before. You can stop and just go walk through the cemetery, and you go back to the oldest part, and there's all these old gravestones, some of them from, say, the 1800s, and you look at the dates on them. Some were infants that were stillborn. They just babies that never had a chance. Some died at 2-3 years old. Some were old. Some people died old. But the thing is, nobody even knows who they are. When I look at an old gravestone and I see somebody and there's essentially the end of their life right there. There's their life encapsulated right there on a piece of rock and their bones under the ground. And I think to myself, what was that person worried about? There was a time in that person's life when they were really scared or they were really anxious or they were dealing with a problem that they just knew just was the end of the world. It was the biggest thing in the world to them. What was it? And how silly does that look now as you stand there looking at the faded slab of stone? And knowing there's nothing left of it but perhaps a few bones in the dirt. I apologize. I could just go on and on. I could make a whole hour show on this topic. And it would probably just be a rambling mess. We know... That was my way of saying I'm going to try to kind of reel things back on topic, I suppose. We know the natural order exists. I mean, even non-believers, a lot of non-believers will acknowledge the fact that the natural order exists. They won't acknowledge that if it exists, somebody had to have created it. But nonetheless, we know the natural order exists. Why does the natural order exist? It's because God, yes, God is capable of micromanaging your life, but he doesn't want to. That's your job. It's your job. That's why you're here. It's not his job to micromanage your life and make your decisions for you and move you over here like a board piece. I don't want to be a board piece. I don't want to be an NPC. I want to make my own decisions. I ask God to guide me. I beg God to guide me, especially if I think it's an important decision. But at the end of the day, the responsibility still remains on me. I don't want to be an NPC. I don't want to be a brainless chess piece being moved around, because that means my life is meaningless and it will end in meaninglessness when I go to the grave. The decisions you make, the decisions I make, the ongoing effort to spiritually mature, that spiritual maturity is what we take with us. God's created the natural order because he doesn't want to micromanage your life. He doesn't care. He cares, but he doesn't care to micromanage your life. This is your responsibility. Here, he has given you the gift of life. Now it's your job to live it. And as you live it, and you, it's your job to try to get as close to him and learn about him, to understand him as best you can. It's our responsibility as believers, as children of God, to continue to try to grow, to get better, to get closer to him, to gain that spiritual maturity so that we have more of that to take with us. Now, we have to understand that because he was causing trouble in the eternal realm, for a time, Satan has been banished to the temple. He got thrown in the box with us. Satan is cast into the box, causing problems. And he's always trying to get the natural order out. He's trying to get God's rules. He's trying to get the structure. He's always trying to get the world back out of balance because he's fighting against God. But he can't really fight directly because he's stuck in the box. Unfortunately, he's in the box with us. So he's constantly trying to put the natural, we see this around us now. He's trying to skewer the natural order. He's trying to override the system. He's trying to override the system and cause the natural order to fail, to break the rules, to break down the entire system, to destroy this box, this realm that God has created. I would imagine he figures if he destroys it, he can get out of the box then. Makes sense. It makes a logical sense. But he's in the box. And when you see all this chaos, I mean, yes, you see the chaos. It's a result of men's decisions. These are the decisions of men. But there is a chaos factor involved. There's an instigator involved. We're told we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, kingdoms, rulers. He's in the box with us. He's fighting against the natural order. And as we're in these really, really strange times, which we live in, it's very plain to see. I mean, people are going or are struggling, fighting, and getting so far away from God's natural order. Things are getting out of balance. People are literally doing self-destructive things. You know, people are literally making self-destructive behaviors, things that by their very instinct they shouldn't be wanting to do. You know, we see this in the world around us. You know, people are doing things to their children. Your instincts tell you. You take any animal, and they try their best to protect their children. It's by instinct. They don't have a thinking mind, but by instinct, they protect their children as best they can. But yet we see now in this world around us that we have people that are doing things to harm their children intentionally. You know, they do things. You watch nature, and I may be getting off on a tangent again. Like I said, this is one of those topics you've unleashed me. I can go on and on. It is so bad. It is one really, truly unnatural state for us to live outside of nature. They pushed people into these cities, and this too has pushed the natural order out of balance because now people are further removed from nature. But you watch nature, and animals are not cruel to their children. Now, people watch animals with their children, and they do things, and people are like, oh my gosh, how can that animal be cruel to its child? But it's not. If you look at a mare, you look at a female horse, and she's got her foal beside her, and you walk out there and look, and you're like, oh, wow, look, that's so pretty. There's a horse with her baby. But then you look and she kicks the baby. And you're like, oh my gosh, the horse is so mean. It's being mean to, it's abusing its child. No, it's not. The mother just knows by instinct that it's time to wean. It's time to wean the baby. The baby doesn't need to be nursing anymore. And you know, she doesn't kick the baby hard. Now, she's capable. She could kill it if she wanted to, but she doesn't. She kicks at it hard enough to get it away. But you see it and you think, oh, well, she's being abusive, but she's not. By their very instincts, animals don't abuse their children, and yet people do. People do every day in most atrocious and horrible ways. You live in nature, you watch nature, and you're not really going to find instances of animals beating their children to death. You're not. You're not going to see instances. Yes, there are times like, you know, I don't know, fish will go in and eat their, you know, the unborn fish eggs or something like that. But as a general rule, you're not going to see a animal beat their child. You're going to watch a cow intentionally, you know, trample their child to death, their calf to death. You don't see that, but yet people do it. But they shouldn't. They have the same instincts. They should have the same instincts that God instilled in these animals. Well, why do we see that? Because people have gotten away from the natural order. The natural order is out of balance. And people are getting further and further. If you're further and further away from the natural order, you're further and further away from God, because God created the natural order of things. Again, I'm sorry. I get to going over these things. This is the hardest part of the show. These Christian-specific segments, the sermons, they're the hardest part. Because one thing leads me to another. I could sit here and go until my voice quits, my throat's dry, and just ramble. It would just be incoherent rambling. But I could just sit here and go on and on, because then this leads you to this thought. Well, if this means that, then what about this over here? I do. I love these topics, and these are the things I think about. I mean, when I have time and my quiet time. And hopefully there are things you think about as well. But last, we got to wrap things up. And I apologize for getting kind of off on several tangents, but that's just how it is. I started thinking about it. And well, this means this. And then look around this. And why is the world like this? What has to mean because of this? To kind of wrap up and summarize, again, just because God knows how the outcome is going to be doesn't mean he's micromanaging that outcome. It's just because he's outside of time and he knows, you know, where it's going to be. It's up to you to make those individual decisions. We absolutely do have free will. God is not micromanaging your life. It's one of those, you've got Christian believers that do. They think that. And it's to the point of absurdity. To the point of absurdity. You know, I stubbed my toe on the table. Why, Jesus? Why was it in your will that I stubbed my toe on this coffee table? Well, he doesn't care. Why would he care about that? He has no interest in micromanaging your life. I think you would think that as Christian believers, we would grasp that. And that is why when we're in times of trouble, why? We pray, God, help me, God, help me. Well, why are you bothering praying for God to help you if he's in the middle of micromanaging your life? You're praying because you're like waving your hands over here, Lord, over here. There's billions of other people on the planet, but please take a moment. I've got this trouble. Please come hear my voice. I'm one of your children through Jesus Christ. And I'm not saying he's indifferent. I'm not saying he won't hear your prayers. I'm not saying that. But you think about it. Why do you pray? Why do we, by instinct, pray to? You got people, and they ain't prayed to God or thought about God in 6 years. But if they get a bad health diagnosis or a loved one dies, all of a sudden they're in tears and they're praying to the Lord. Why? It's instinctual. Lord, look over here. I got trouble. Over here. Look over here. I got trouble. Why do we instinctually reach out to him in times of trouble? Because we understand somewhere deep inside that he's not micromanaging every part of our lives. We're trying to get his attention. Please take note, Lord. If you got some time here, please take note. Please consider my situation. Please help me out. Throw me a bone, God. Throw me a bone. Help me out here. You know, we understand that instinctually that he's not micromanaging our lives. We're not, and again, I'm glad. I mean, I want to walk with the Lord. I believe the closer we walk with him, the more time we spend in prayer and reaching out and trying to understand him, you know, the more, how do I want to put it? The more noticeable we are, the closer he is to us, that perhaps, you know, he does kind of have an eye on us. But by no means is he micromanaged. Is he moving us around? I don't want to be an NPC. You know, I get that he knows that I'm going to be wherever I'm going to be tomorrow. If that has anything to do with his plan. If not, then he's not even paying attention to where you're going to be tomorrow. Because it doesn't matter. You're just going to be at work. God doesn't care. You're going to be at work. He's got other things to do. But he's not. Like I say, I always find it funny when I see these or read or hear these Christian believers that take it to the extreme. That, you know, like I said, everything that happens in their lives, is God's willed it. You know, God wills it. Well, you know, it's God's will. And really, I said we're wrapping this up, and see, I'm still going. One of the times it's really, really absurd is like, when people like put it off on God, you know, it's like, you know, somebody left their two-year-old toddler alone in the backyard with their pit bull, and the pit bull ate their head off. And then you watch them and these people, and you're going to see this in your life. If you're young, you haven't seen it yet, you will. You'll see somebody do something really stupid and say their kid gets killed. They left their two-year-old with their pit bull, and the pit bull ate their head off. And then they're at the funeral, and they're like, oh, Jesus took him. Jesus didn't have nothing to do with that. Your dumbass put your two-year-old in the backyard with your pit bull, thinking, oh, it'll be all right. Fluffy wouldn't do something like that. They tried to pawn it off on Jesus. Jesus took him. I don't know. I stuck my kid in the front seat. And, I don't know. Got totally high on drugs and run off the road and flipped the car over 17 times and killed the kid. Jesus took him. No, your dumbass sent him away. Jesus didn't go in there and say, well, time for your kid to go. Your dumbass just made bad decisions. And now you're trying to pawn it off on Jesus. I didn't make a bad decision and do something really stupid. Jesus took him. You'll see that. People wind up applying these things, like God micromanaging their lives. And so as a result, because God's micromanaging everything, if they screw something up, guess what? It's no problem. They didn't screw it up. It's just all part of what Jesus was planning to do. Well, like I said, we got to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of it. I hope I was able to articulate it. I always wind up wrapping these things up thinking, did I really do a good job? There's times, there have been times you wouldn't know it because of the magic of editing, your magic of just simply being able to stop and re-record. There's been times I've re-recorded entire segments because I'm like, I'm just not happy with it. I don't think I articulated that the way that I should have, but hopefully we did manage it today. Yeah, well, hopefully it made it a little clearer to understand the way I see how these things operate, how all of this is functioning, how the system works, and our role in it as Christian believers. Hopefully you got something out of it. I do appreciate the time. Obviously, I do appreciate the subject matter. I've gone on for about 40 minutes on it. So, you know, hopefully you got something out of it. I do appreciate you hanging around for it. And I do appreciate all of you for listening. We're going to go ahead and get on out of here. And we'll be sure and see you. Hopefully, we will see you back here next Tuesday for the next installment of Parish of the Patriots.